Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia, it's another episode of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Craft Bag has a story of biblical proportions. At 12:30, I guess that report on the Mavs drama wasn't as big a pile of BS as Mark Cuban suggested. And in mere minutes, it is a huge recruiting weekend. We break it all down with today's guest host. I'm Trey Elling. Isaiah Collier, a.k.a. Zay, is behind the glass today. What's up, Zay? How you doing?
Good, Trey. How you doing, man?
Doing all right. And sitting across from me is not the Waxahachie native who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you. That's because Chad Hastings is on vacation for one more day. He will be back on Monday. In his place, we have one of my favorite people on the planet. He is the managing editor at Inside Texas. It is the great Justin Wells. What's up, my brother? How you doing today?
Hey, now. Always a joy to be back in the wonderful city of Austin, and even better when I get to come sit across from you for 3 hours and get to talk sports, pop culture, and all that of the all the above. Get to see my man Zay behind the glass. Love that shirt, brother. I love that.
Thanks, man.
Boys in the hood.
He's coming correct, and so he knew I was coming, and it's Friday. And we got a big OV weekend, and we got lots of stuff happening. Father's Day weekend. Let's rock.
I have to say, Boys in the Hood is maybe the first bit of pop culture that put my first name on the map.
Really?
I am happy. Because, yeah, there's a Trey character in Boys in the Hood, correct?
Yeah, that's Cuba Gooding.
Cuba Gooding Jr. And I think he was T-R-E with the accent mark above the E, which I, in a perfect world, my parents would have gone with that spelling over T-R-E-Y, but at least they went T-R-E-Y and not T-R-A-Y, because I already had to deal with enough what you put your food on top of jokes when I was a kid growing up. It would have been much worse if that was the actual spelling.
Interesting. I've never heard it spelled T-R-E. Like
E with the accent?
Yeah, until Boys in the Hood, I mean.
Okay.
But
then you have T-R...
Nobody else.
You have T-R-A-E?
I've seen T-R-E when it's the third. Not the senior, not the junior, but the third.
That's what I am.
I've heard someone use that spell it that way.
Did you guys ever have to deal with any crap because of your first name? Because my real first name is Ronald. So I would go the first day of school and say to the teacher, hey, teach, look, the roll call says Ronald. Please call me Trey when you call my name out for the first time, because that's the name that I go by. The cool teachers would do that. The teachers who were a-holes, the teachers who were probably C-minus students in college, who were teaching just to get summers off and long Christmas breaks, they would still insist on calling me Ronald as a way to try and embarrass me, which I always ticked me off in elementary school, and I never got along with those teachers after that. Did you guys ever deal with any crap because of your first names? You have pretty good first names.
Yeah, Justin was actually pretty early in the late 70s, early 80s, when that name went up, you know, obviously at that time. And so it wasn't an issue. It was pretty standard. I only hated the fact that my last name started with a W, because we always had to wait in the lunch line in alphabetical order. So, you know, just think about waiting in the cafeteria. I was the last one to eat almost every day, and that line felt like it took forever to get through. So I didn't have any name issues, though.
Zay, we know you were a problem child in elementary school. We found that out yesterday. Was any of this induced by kids trying to make fun of your first name? You have an okay first name, and your nickname is even better, with the Z-A-Y.
See, that's the thing. I used to get really PO'd because people would always say, hey, Zay, your name is biblical, right? And I'd be like, hell to the naw. It is Isaiah Zeke Thomas, Bad Boy Pistons, two-time NBA champion and Hall of Famer. Get it right.
You're like, my name's not Ezekiel, people. It's Isaiah, spelled like Isaiah Thomas.
Yes.
I actually asked you that without hearing this story a couple of years ago. I'm like, wait a second. I-S-I-A-H, this is Isaiah Thomas related, isn't it? You're like, actually, yes, it is. See, yep. I wouldn't have been one of those kids. I would have been the fat kid who was actually getting the genesis of your name correct back in elementary school.
Yeah, CeCe and Annie named me after Isaiah Thomas and Michael Jordan. Pretty clever for basketball fans back then.
So Isaiah Michael Collier?
Isaiah Jordan Collier.
Oof, even better.
It and you had to come out good because, you know, those two, the names together sounds wonderful, but they hate each other. So it had that coming together is what brought Zay the wonderful bowl of wonderful he is.
Did your middle name ever keep your first name from participating in the Olympics?
No, I don't think my parents took the beef into the situation, but I do know that when I was baking in my mom's oven, that was during the 90 finals. I think if Jordan and them would have advanced to the 90 finals instead of the Pistons, my name probably would have been Jordan Zeke Collier.
Oh, that's another strong name. Well, your parents did a good job.
They did all right either way.
All right, not to bury the lead too much more. The big reason why you're here, Justin, and you are literally the first person that I call whenever I find out Chad Hastings is taking more than a day of vacation to see. Justin, how many of these days do you want to co-host with me? And this week just happened to coincide with what is a bonkers month in the world of college football recruiting, which includes, of course, the Longhorns welcoming a number of kids to campus for camps, for unofficial visits, for official visits as well. So you're actually in town, I want to say, maybe three or four straight weekends just to try and help IT cover it all. So it worked out that you were already going to be here today. So we made sure to get Friday on the calendar, I want to say, 3 or 4 weeks ago now. So with that said, though, big recruiting weekend last weekend, obviously. Arch Manning headlining the kids who are here to participate in camps, to go on those official visits. Texas did pick up a commitment last weekend as well. We'll get to that in just a second, but what can folks expect to hear about this weekend with regard to the kids coming to visit the 40 acres?
Well, last weekend was essentially the junior day. I mean, they hosted a handful of seniors, 2022 kids, but it was the premise was 2023. Arch Manning, Jonte Cook, you know, the big hot JV Antoviano, the big names, the big guns, Anthony Hill. This weekend is going to be focused more on the class of 2022. This is the current class that Texas and Coach Sark is trying to build. And there are a ton of big names coming in this weekend for this particular class, including commitments, which you always like when you have one of these weekends. If you can split, you know, half of them to be commits or potential commits, and others are kids you're trying to convince otherwise. Because when those guys get around each other, just the engagement, getting to know each other, being in the unique perspective, position that they're taking an actual official visit to a major college, it's all part of the bonding process, the relationship building. And with social media and the way these days these kids reach out to each other from, you know, country, from state to state, it's good to have them all on campus at one time because nothing beats contact, in-person contact. The Texas coaches for the last 2 weeks have just finally been able to leave campus and bring people on campus. That in-person evaluation, that first impression when you meet each other, because sometimes, listen, this is sometimes these players' first opportunity to actually meet these coaches, and that's a big deal. And one of the things that Coach Steve Sarkisian is so good at is the relationship building. It's the one-on-one. It's the genuine appreciation for what you can offer. Most of these recruits that I've spoke to already say, well, you know, what's Coach Sark's message? Well, he doesn't really talk about football. He talks about family a lot. He talks about me being a good son, a good husband one day, a good father. Those start to resonate and trickle down. And I think that's where this in-person stuff is big. And that's why this month of June has been so big for the University of Texas, because there's so many opportunities to have so many positive, big, good impressions.
And that's important also to talk about things other than football, because these kids, their lives are oversaturated by football. Most people who come up to them want to talk about football. So for Sark, a guy who, according to all accounts, is a genuine dude who actually does care about these kids for reasons beyond the football field, unlike the guy that he replaced, perhaps, that shows just how genuine he is, that he wants to learn about some of the other areas of their life or make sure that he's developing them, not just as football players, but as young men who will grow into full-fledged adults who have all these various responsibilities.
No question. I'll give you a couple examples. 2022 linebacker Jeremy Patton out of Tennehall. He visited the first weekend in the official capacity. A number of times throughout the weekend, Coach Sark would come grab him, and they would go off to the side for 30 minutes, and they would chit-chat, and they would have a little one-on-one. You know, kids, a lot of the times, they want that attention. They want that one-on-one with the coaches, and it's so it's so difficult often because Sark's having to spend time with so many different parents, kids at different times in different little time windows. You know, you don't want to, you want to give enough attention, but not completely, you know, neglect someone else. Sark's found a really good balance, it seems, with doing that. Another example, you know, a lot of people don't talk about linebacker coach Jeff Choate. You know, the more I'm talking to recruits, the more I hear his name come up. There are a ton of kids that really, really relate and like Coach Choate. And he did the same thing. I'll give an example. Last weekend, 2022, Evanston Township out of Chicago, Illinois, linebacker Sebastian Cheeks. He's on campus, and Choate brings him to the side, and they did a little camp work, and they had a video session, a little film work, and you go over that, and you talk a little football, and then he pulls him, turns off the camera and says, you know, how are you going to be a better son? How are you going to be a better student going into this year? How, when you're a husband one day, how are you going to be a better partner? And then when you're a father one day, how are you going to you know, bring those values, those principles to your son? It really caught Cheeks' attention. I spoke to him a couple days ago, and he gushed over Jeff Choate and that relationship. And
it's still resonating even a couple of days after he leaves Austin.
No question. To the fact, the point where he was supposed to see Notre Dame this weekend, and he's not. And now he's got one more official setup for Michigan on June 25th to the 27th. And so we'll see where that goes. But I think Texas is in good position, and it's because of that personal attention. It's because of that taking 30 minutes to get to know somebody a little bit more. I know some recruitments go different ways. Every recruitment is different. I stand by that rule. But so far, so good, because these guys are relating to these players. And unlike what we saw with the previous staffs, it's building relationships, and that's why this month is so critical.
Does Kwiatkowski have any of that in him? We have obviously heard the story about his time at Washington and him allowing a co-defensive coordinator to be named in order to keep Jimmy Lake around. And Jimmy Lake ultimately becomes the guy that replaces Chris Peterson as the head coach at Washington. Is Kwiatkowski one of those guys who naturally relates to these kids on that extra level, that non-football level?
I think so. Talking to Derek Brown, he's an outside linebacker. Essentially, he's going to be an edge in college out of Texarkana up at Texas High. I spoke to him. He loves Coach PK. He loves how he can. But I think it's not so much just the personal attention as much as it is spending it with family. Because I know PK has made a point to build a relationship with his family, but also, you know, explaining how he can fit, how he can relate, and you know, each coach has their own, you know, skill set when it comes to recruiting. And I think we're seeing each one come out a little bit more. With Choate, it might be that hitting home, you know, relationship type. With Coach PK, it's showing guys how they can flourish in his system, you know, in the right set and the right, you know, telling Derek Brown, if we put you at the J, if we put you at the Jack, you're going to be able to do this, you're going to be able to do that. And then the NFL in 3 or 4 years loves the versatility of these guys along the line. I think each one kind of brings their own skill set. And so with PK, I think it's more scheme oriented, but he certainly relates, because any guy that can talk to a kid from deep East Texas who came from Washington for the last 7 or 8 years, they can relate. I give him credit.
Other than Steve Sarkisian, and we're going to take Jeff Banks out of this equation as well, because he is in his own universe in this regard.
Indeed.
Who are some of the other guys on the offensive side of the ball, talking about coaches here, who really are special with regards to their ability to connect with these kids?
The first one that jumps off the page is AJ Milwee, the quarterback coach. He's a guy that I got to actually see at SMU a couple weekends ago during one of their mega camps when they brought in 2,000 players and 400 college coaches. And talking to a lot of those players, Milwee is somebody that really relates to those guys. He's a guy that, you know, he's Sark's right-hand man when it comes to quarterback play and evaluating. And I think he's learned a lot from Sark. And that's the, if you want to learn about that, that's the guy to definitely take lessons. Milwee, I think, is very relatable. I think he's building some good relationships, especially with the 2022 and 2023 quarterbacks. I think he's one of the guys that's really connected with Arch Manning on a different level, and I think that's only going to benefit Texas down the road. Another guy that pops up that I hear a lot is Kyle Flood. Like, you know, no one talks a lot about the O-line, but in the last, 4 years, it was pretty much a Herb Hand bash session in Austin.
But he cooks such good barbecue, Justin.
He's a renaissance man that may not recruit well. At the end of the day, though, Kyle Flood has flipped that script. He's got Texas in with some of the best in-state offensive linemen, and that's all you can ask. You know, we're not going to sit here and bash Hand, but you've got to be in these recruitments with these elite guys. The Kelvin Banks from Humble Summer Creek, he's on campus today. The Devin Campbells, the top guard in the country. The Cole Hudsons can play center, can play guard. Connor Robertson, your local guy, Westlake kid, a guy that he's another one that's on a visit this weekend to Texas. He's in those recruitments. The fact that he's involved in those recruitments, and you speak to those guys, and they love Flood's passion and his vision, I think he's another guy on the offensive staff that has shown tremendous growth so far.
By the way, Flood gets some great news. I guess earlier this week, you guys reported it in today's Humidor. It is the first note in today's Humidor. Derek Kerstetter looks like he is back and putting in the work, moving around well, considering the serious ankle injury suffered near the end of last season. That is a huge boost for this offensive line if he is able to go and truly at 100% for game one. And starting at which position, Justin?
I would probably say right tackle.
Right tackle.
Right tackle. You know, he's played there before. This is a man of many talents.
But his future in the pros is at center, Justin?
Well, I think we've learned that he's capable of playing center.
Very capable center. Not to take a shot at Kerstetter. That was taking a shot at the previous decisions made about where to play Derek Kerstetter.
He's certainly capable. There's no doubt about that. But then we see Jake Majors and we think, okay, that's a center. That guy's made to play center. You know, and of course, you know, Kerstetter being healthy is a big addition, a big help, because any experience on this line is going to be valuable for Flood and for Sark. They've got a lot of athleticism, and they got a lot of guys that have played a little bit in certain spots, and so it's that cohesion is what they're looking for. They need that first five that know they're going to line up beside each other every day, and if Kerstetter is continues to be on that track, we're looking at possibly right tackle, and that's pretty good, because if you've got Christian Jones at left tackle, that means you've got your first tackle off the bench is Andre Carrick, and he, to me, pound for pound, might be one of the best linemen in the program. So that's showing depth. That's showing promise.
So as far as the kids coming in this weekend, who are some of the bigger names that you are keeping an eye on, some of the guys that you're going to try and speak with throughout the weekend, but of course a couple of days after just to check in to see how things went here in Austin?
If you're looking for big names, Texas fans, the number one's probably Evan Stewart, one of the fastest prospects I've ever seen.
As this coaching staff also tries to get more speed on the field on both sides of the ball, but especially at wide receiver.
After the first practice, sources told us within the program that Sark immediately noticed this team needs speed, needs more speed, needs better speed. And when you bring in guys like Xavier Worthy and Keelan Robinson from the portal, that's exactly what you're doing. You're answering that. Evan Stewart is the quintessential burner. Complete body control, in and out of his routes, is fluid. He's a natural guy. Every school in the country wants him. And Evan's one of those guys. He's fun to watch. I've gotten to know him pretty well over the last year or so. He's really savvy, okay? He's one of these guys that is very unique in social media. He understands marketing yourself. You know, when you talk about TikTok and Snapchat and Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, this is a guy that's going to be able to monetize himself in the future. He understands the game. So his big data point is going to be NIL, name, image, and likeness. Then the Texas sales pitch has been huge so far for these recruits. And that, to me, is going to be the biggest factor with Evan Stewart. It's going to be selling NIL and how he can benefit. And if Sark and Coach Coleman can convince him to be the Devontae Smith of this class, the Jalen Waddell of this class, if he can be in that category. The other twin, we call them the twin turbos, Evan Stewart, and the other one is Brennan Thompson. And when I say fast, this dude is fast. 10.38 in the 100 fast, 21.27 in the 200 fast. At 5'10", 165 pounds, he's a burner. This staff loves him. We reported about 3 or 4 weeks ago that he was going to come in for this visit this weekend in the unofficial capacity. We mentioned it again a few days ago about Thompson coming in and taking on. He wants to do it unofficially, because if you can come in on your own dime and save that official for the fall, when you can come in and see a game and actually get the football experience, the game day on Saturday, the tailgating, and the actual get that experience. I think that's a bigger factor. Texas is in a good spot with Brennan Thompson right now. I know Oregon's on him. I know Oklahoma State's on him. There's a handful of others. I mean, the kid's got 36 offers, but right now he's another one that's on campus. And one more wide receiver worth noting could be showing up here in the next day or two, and that's Jordan Hudson. He's probably the best receiver in state after the catch. You know, he's 6'1", 185 pounds out of Garland. He recently decommitted from OU. He's kind of been a soft verbal to the Sooners for 3 or 4 months now. He officially decommitted, but there's one school that Texas has to get by, and that's SMU. And believe it or not, that's where he's at right now. And a lot of people would think, well, you know, how's Texas going to lose a recruit or a battle to SMU? Well, it happens every once in a while. And when you're getting coached and sold by Rashad Samples, who's one of the best recruiters in the country, he does a tremendous job at keeping those DFW kids in the Metroplex. I think that's going to be one that it's worth monitoring as well. And so just from the offensive side, that's some of the bigger guys that are coming in. Kelvin Banks, the best tackle in the state, he's here as well. He had visited Oregon, absolutely loved it. Visited LSU, absolutely loved it. But I think Texas is still in a strong position with Banks, and I think this weekend can solidify that as well.
Real quick before the break, after he visited the junior day last weekend, worked out with his buddy Arch Manning, Reuben Owens, who was one of the best running backs in the class of 2023 and was a Texas commit at the time, decided to decommit to keep his options open. Now, my threshold for caring about kids committing and decommitting who are two classes away is very low. Just how concerned are you with this one? And is Texas still squarely in the mix for Reuben Owens?
I'm not too concerned, because sometimes doing this business, you kind of see things coming. You can kind of see the clouds ahead of the storm. And I think with Reuben Owens, sometimes guys really do like being recruited. Some guys really do enjoy the process. Some guys really want all that attention. And I think with Reuben being committed, he felt like maybe he couldn't get the full gamut of that when he took these visits, because he's already seen Alabama. He's already seen LSU. He set up to see OU pretty soon. He told me he's going to see Ohio State at the end of the month. Maybe he felt like he wanted more of that freedom when he took these visits, to be more open in that regard. I'm not real sure, but like you said, it's hard to care too much about a decommitment from 2 years away.
Right.
He is the best tailback in the state. He's damn sure one of the best backs in the country. Texas is still in the mix for him. You know, a lot of times you see a kid decommit and it pretty much erases that school from the standings. That's not the case here. I think Texas is still going to be in it. The guy loves Stan Drayton. He's taken unofficials and student trips to Texas 3 or 4 times this spring, including twice this summer. He's familiar with this place, and I think he likes it. I think he just wants to open up a little bit more and try to enjoy the process more and more. And it's one of those things where, you know, he could have been a class leader. He could have been a guy that brings in other guys. And I know that he's got a connection with Arch Manning and with Jonte Cook. And to a certain extent, it may have a small effect on Cook. But for Manning, it's not going to have any effect. That guy is his own entity. He will make his own decision. That family will make their own call based on what's best for him and their family. And it won't have anything to do with recruits that surround him. And so it's unfortunate. Owens is a really good kid. He's fun to watch. He's fun to cover. But I think he wants to enjoy the process a little bit more. And I wouldn't be surprised if he drug this out over the next couple years.
He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, co-hosting with me today all the way up until 3 o'clock. Isaiah Collier behind the glass. Chad Hastings on vacation. This is Shirts and Skins. Coming up next, we talk about the drama in Dallas Mavericks country. Looks like Mark Cuban's BS comment was a little bit of BS itself. You're listening to Shirts and Skins on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins.
Thought at first, Zay, you were going to go a little Eddie Murphy action. But then I realized that it was actually hard for the money. Back here on Shirts and Skins, Chad Hastings on vacation for one more day. Zay behind the glass. Justin Wells is co-hosting with me today all the way up until 3 o'clock. And Justin, I have to ask you about this one, because Zay made the claim a couple days ago that Eddie Murphy's Party All the Time is an out-and-out jam. It's not just an earworm. It's not something that has pop sensibilities because it was very catchy. Obviously being, what, co-written and produced by Rick James, is that right, Zay?
Yeah.
But it's just a flat-out great song. Where do you stand on Party All the Time?
In 1985, 86.
85.
It was pretty good because it was Eddie Murphy. Mm-hmm. And Eddie did no wrong. And so, to me, it was all right. It was pretty good. I never listened to the rest of the album, but I didn't need to because I could party all the time. In 2021, being the music connoisseur that I am, it is trash. It's digital 80s minutia, no bueno.
That defines so much of what came out in the 1980s. There are so many movies that we loved in the 80s that if you watch them for the first time in 2021, you're like, this isn't that good. There was a movie that Chad and I reviewed last week called Running Scared with Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines. Set in Chicago, mid-1980s. It's a buddy cop movie. And Chad loved this, but he watched it in 85, 86, whenever it came out. Well, I watched it for the first time last week. I'm like, I guess I see the appeal if you go back 30-plus years now. But for me watching it for the first time in 2021, it ain't getting the job done.
The best thing about Running Scared was Michael McDonald's Sweet Freedom.
That's true.
The only thing that was anything good about that movie at the time. But it's nostalgia. That's what does. Anytime a song or, you know, a vision, something can take you back, you always remember the good times. You always think of it as a positive. And like you said, some of these movies, we go back and look, it's cheesy. I mean, it's awful, you know. But at the same time, then you have your Roadhouse, where it's so cheesy
that
it's still awesome.
Oh, when you rip a throat out of another man in the middle of a fight?
He didn't want to do that, Trey. He had to. It was just like Memphis.
Eddie Murphy is one of those guys, not to get too far off the sports path here, but he is one of those guys that really can do just about anything and will at least give it a try. Like, if he were to come out with a track that hit the pop charts, I would give it a listen. I probably would care for it as much as I cared about Party All the Time, but the reason why I bring this up is, when do we get Eddie Murphy doing stand-up again? It's been, what, since the late 1980s? I would pay $100 pay-per-view fee. People pay $100 to watch UFC fights and boxing matches. I would pay $100 on pay-per-view to watch Eddie Murphy perform stand-up live at pick a theater around the country. I don't care where it is. Just to see him give that a go again. Because you know, based on each of those two previous specials that really helped to put him on the map, along with SNL and then some of the movies that he started cranking out at that time, that's where I want to see him give it another go. I don't want to see a second or third iteration of Coming to America or a fifth iteration of Beverly Hills Cop. I want to see him do the stand-up thing again.
Does he still have it, though, with all the kids?
Zay, I think he does still have it. I mean, he's on the Mount Rushmore of stand-up comics. And I've always wondered why he never returned to it. But it seems like when he went into his daddy daycare phase and he starts doing all these kind of goofy, you know, kiddie family movies, that he got away from the raw. He got away from the delirious. But that's his base. That's what brought him to the forefront. I'm with you. If it's $100, I'm on my way. I'm splitting the bill with you. Because I would pay to watch Eddie Murphy. People don't understand that watch stand-up comedy. Eddie was the king. Now, Richard Pryor, he put him on. But Eddie Murphy set the standard. And would he still be good? Oh, are you kidding me? Did you see him on Saturday Night Live a couple years ago? The improv alone was hilarious. Eddie Murphy still has it, and I think he will always have it.
Here's the thing, too. He doesn't scratch that funny bone all that much anymore. He's taking on more serious roles now. And occasionally they're darkly comedic. And yeah, Coming to America was obvious. I mean, obviously, it's a comedy, and there were a lot of people who liked it. I didn't care very much for it, but I thought that's because they were trying to go back to the old joke well too much versus making it its own thing. But he still showed flashes, even in that, of some of those other old school funny characters. So he still has it in him. It's just about him putting in that work, and that might require him to make pop-in appearances at the Comedy Cellar in New York, or go to the Comedy Store when Joe Rogan gets his club going here in Austin. Popping in places to actually work through the act, to work the act out, to get it ready to actually put it out for the people on HBO Max, on Netflix. Again, pay-per-view. I don't give a damn what it is. Eddie Murphy has to do that at least one more time before it's all said and done.
Your old school comedians, I think, go that path. They go to Second City. They go to the Comedy Store. They do that to kind of to the Dave Chappelle
to hone their craft.
The
absolutely,
the Joe Rogans.
He could go out to where Dave Chappelle is allowing everybody right now. I mean, Bill Murray and Dave Chappelle apparently hung out in the last couple of weekends, which is like a dream scenario for me. Dave Chappelle is just welcoming anybody to come do stand up in what is it, Silver Springs, Ohio, right now.
He could. I don't see Eddie going that route though, and that's one. Eddie's not going to put out a terrible product. He's not going to put out a practiced, rehearsed, strong product. He has too much of a reputation and credibility. But I don't see him going back to his roots to kind of hone in new material. That being said, I would love him back on the air. I mean, back on the screen. I'd read somewhere years ago that he was actually talking about doing another Raw. I think it was about 3 or 4 years ago, and then something happened, and it was canceled, and I hadn't heard anything since. Eddie's the king. Get that guy back. We've seen Chappelle come back. We've seen Rogan do what he does. Let's get Eddie back out there.
Agreed with that. A lot of us could have seen what was going to happen with the Dallas Mavericks front office when their season ended, unfortunately, with that first-round collapse to the Los Angeles Clippers. But sure enough, Justin, here we are. This is something I have to give you credit for, because a couple of weeks ago, you called my attention to Donnie Nelson's end-of-season presser, where he doled out a pretty big backhanded compliment to Luka Doncic, saying he's a great player, but he needs to learn how to share the basketball a little bit more. And I'm paraphrasing there, but that is essentially what he said. It was a very strange comment coming from a guy who was responsible for surrounding Luka with a couple of okay pieces, but a lot of crap. And sure enough, when it was all said and done, despite Mark Cuban claiming that an Athletic article from earlier this week was BS, that suggested, look, there is some turmoil in the front office right now that has Luka Doncic reluctant to sign that Supermax contract. Here we are all a couple of days after that. Donnie Nelson has resigned as this team's GM, and now Rick Carlisle, who has an immaculate reputation around the NBA as one of the top coaches in this league, has also decided to step away to no longer coach Luka Doncic. For you as a Mavericks fan right now, where is your head at? I mean, I'm guessing that your superstar is going to sign that long-term deal, but you just lost a couple of long-term pieces with this franchise, guys who helped this team win a championship a decade ago.
Right now, my head's spinning. And I think that's the same with most Mavericks fans. So much has happened. When that story hit, first Donnie Nelson does this exit interview, and we found a few outtakes that seemed a little off. They seemed a little backhanded, like we spoke about. Then the story from Tim Cato, who's got a tremendous reputation, you know, writes for The Athletic, covers the NBA. And from what I understand, a lot of that was accurate. There were parts that were probably embellished. There were parts that I believe Cuban discounted when it talked about rotations, player rotations to Rick Carlisle, things of that sort, that Doncic was hesitant about signing an extension. We've since heard from Doncic. He wants to stay in Dallas. If there's one guy that really wants to have his career the way it is, it's in Dallas, it's Luka. He's given that impression in the last 3 years, and I don't think that's going to change. And Mark Cuban is going to be the guy that puts attempts, let me say that, to put the best players around him. After everything that's transpired, I have this feeling that maybe Donnie Nelson was ready to get out. Mm-hmm. I have this feeling that maybe Rick Carlisle was waiting for one or two shoes to drop for him to get out. Maybe those guys have been together for so long. Donnie's been there for like 24 years. I believe Rick Carlisle's been the coach there 12, 13 years. And that's a long time to work together, and for good and bad. And, you know, Donnie hasn't done the best job of surrounding Luka with talent. He just hasn't. You cannot blame Rick Carlisle. Too many fans want to do that. It's not Carlisle. They have not. The Josh Richardson trade was a failure, giving up Seth Curry. Bringing in KP long-term may not have been the best move. It was good short-term, but not long-term.
And I have no qualms with him taking that risk at the time, because even though Porzingis was coming off of a serious injury, prior to that he was looked at as one of the up-and-coming superstars in this league, so you at least tried something there.
Absolutely. And so, you know, Nelson, they asked Luka about it yesterday, I believe, during his press conference with the Slovenian Olympic team. They asked him, you know, what did you think about that? He said, well, you know, He's close to Donnie. This is a guy that found him. This is a guy that built a relationship with him and essentially drafted him, or had the draft day trade engineered. And so it was tough for Luka, but that's part of the business. He's still 22 years old, and Dallas and Mark Cuban still have plenty of time to put the right pieces around him. You just want to make sure that path is the right path, because that Supermax locks you in for a while. And there, I mean, it's worth the $200 million, but you're locked in for a while, and so I think this might be Cuban, you know, essentially erasing the chalkboard and going back and starting from scratch to try to build around a winner. There's a lot of dirt in Nowitzki and Luka. There's so many comparisons there, and I think Cuban's going to follow that path like he did with Dirk. Surround this guy with the best he can do. That's going to start with he's going to have to nail this new head coaching hire, and he's going to have to nail the player operations guy. So he's going to have to fill some big holes, because Donnie Nelson and Rick Carlisle are two main reasons why Dallas has had the success they've had over the last 15, 20 years.
Say, real quick before the break, what do you think about the drama in Big D?
Well, to piggyback with what Justin said, they hired Dirk today as a special advisor. So Mark Cuban,
I hadn't seen that. Interesting.
Yeah, he hired Dirk today as a special advisor to help them find a new GM and a new head coach. So he knew with what was going on, you know, you need Dirk to come back and maybe help settle things down. But yeah, it's not looking good for Mavericks fans, and I'm very eager to see how it all plays out before the 22 season starts? Yeah, 2022 season.
Chad Hastings is on vacation. Zay Collier and Justin Wells both helping me out today. Coming up on the other side, it is the crap bag. Chad's gone, but the crap bag must go on. We have a story of biblical proportions to tell you folks about. That's coming up next here on Shirts and Skins on the Horn.
Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey.
Back here on Shirts and Skins, Chad Hastings on vacation for one more day. Justin Wells sitting across from me today. Isaiah Collier is behind the glass. Zay, who is this?
This is Cher. Wasn't it good?
Wow, Cher. I never would have guessed that. Cher has a very unique sound, though. You can't help but to shake it a little bit when you hear the beat to this song.
Oh, this is a jam. Justin Wells, you can't hate on this.
Not a fan of Cher. I like the movie Mask. But beyond that, I'm just not a fan of someone that's had $3 million worth of plastic surgery.
She has done that. She has jumped the plastic surgery shark. That we talk about that on this show from time to time. Unfortunately, you know who else is starting to go there now? And I thought she was keeping it subtle for the longest time. Jennifer Aniston. Seen
yes.
some recent things with her, including the Friends reunion, where you can start to tell where the work is being done. It's a bummer. Just let it happen naturally.
With a woman like that, she would age beautifully. Come on, Jennifer, it's not worth it.
She could have been this generation's Diane Lane.
I blame her husband. He should reassure her more.
you're blaming Justin Theroux?
If that's her husband, yeah.
He's a funny dude. Also a good dramatic actor as well, as he showed in The Leftovers.
He popped in on Parks and Rec as the attorney, and Leslie Knope dated him for a few episodes.
I think he co-wrote Tropic Thunder, too, if I'm not mistaken. He is a very talented guy. I mean, he's obviously a lucky guy getting to be with Jennifer Aniston. But if he's not giving her enough reassurance, then he is also to blame.
Yes, sir.
And on that note, let's go ahead and hit the crap bag.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Crap bag brought to you by Audiovisual Consultations, avconsultations.com, 255-8678. Guys, I don't know how familiar you are with the Bible, but there are some pretty crazy stories in the Bible. Is there a craziest story that comes to mind for either of you? Zay, we'll start with you on this one.
No. I want to say...
Really not the talking donkey or the turning three loaves of bread and two fishes into feeding thousands or anything along those lines? The parting of the Red Seas?
No, not for me.
Okay.
I don't know.
The world being created in 7 days. Is that one maybe a little bit outlandish for you?
A little bit. That one's a little bit. It's a big world we live in.
Okay.
That was pretty big. And also the snake and the apple. And that's too real. Temptation is too real.
Let's maybe call that one a figurative story. Let's not suggest that that story is real, having been passed down hundreds of thousands of years to actually getting an accurate representation in retranslated text all these years later. Well, one of the crazier stories in the Bible, other than the Sodom and Gomorrah thing, has to be Jonah being eaten by a whale, living in the whale's belly for, I want to say, 2 to 3 days, literally singing songs and playing the whale's ribs like a xylophone straight out of a cartoon, and eventually being spit back out to spread whatever the message was in the Bible. Well, we have a real-life version of this that is being claimed near Cape Cod. A commercial lobster diver says he escaped relatively unscathed after nearly being swallowed by a humpback whale. Michael Picard, 56, told local media and also explained on social media that he was diving off the coast of Provincetown, Massachusetts last Friday when a whale suddenly scooped him up. Quote, "I was in his closed mouth for about 30 to 40 seconds before he rose to the surface and spit me out. I am very bruised, but I have no broken bones." The Cape Cod Times is reporting that Picard was pulled out of the water by his crewmen and rushed back to shore, where he was transported to the hospital. He walked, albeit with a limp, out of the hospital that afternoon. While he's still recovering from some soft tissue damage, Picard said that he's going to be back in the water as soon as he heals. Now, I don't know about you guys, but as soon as I am eaten by a whale for 30 to 40 seconds, which, by the way, this story is totally in question right now. I don't necessarily believe that he's telling us the truth. But if a whale swallows me and tries to chew me up for 30 or 40 seconds, that's probably it for me being in the ocean for a while.
I can't, you know, if this is all factual, how does he not completely panic? I mean, think about that. I mean, he went on Jimmy Kimmel last night to demonstrate what it would look like coming out of.
Oh, he went on Kimmel.
Yeah, this man is, he's pushing the story now. So it's taken on a life of its own, and it almost feels opportunistic. But it goes back to, no, I'm not going back into the water. Now, a jellyfish, you know, something stings you, you know, something like that. Maybe gar gets, that's nothing. You get completely swallowed by another creature. No, I'm not going back in the water. No.
I'm probably going to work in the mountains at that point. I'm getting as far away from oceans as possible. Zay?
It depends on how cozy it is in there, to be honest. I mean, I've seen Free Willy a few times, and I love that movie, especially when Free Willy jumps over the, you know, little bridge or whatever. Like, so whales could do magnificent things. So I wouldn't question homeboy here.
Here's the thing, though. Free Willy did not eat one of those kids and chew it up like a used cupcake wrapper before spitting it one of those kids back out. Free Willy was just nuzzling up with the kids, like Flipper the Dolphin.
There's the dark story with whales, obviously, going on at SeaWorld. So there's certain things that they didn't want us to know. But I don't know. It's still a great Disney movie.
as soon as that whale is sucking your head like you're a gobstopper, you are not going to go anywhere near that whale again.
Let's not forget how it happened in Finding Nemo. You know, it was a good ending. It could have been bad. It could have twisted and really gone dark. But they got out, and they weren't afraid of the water. So maybe that's the example and the standard we should be following.
How much does homeboy weigh? If he's out here like a buck 20.
I can only go based on just a picture that I'm seeing of this guy.
Maybe 140, 150, maybe.
He's probably in the 160 to 175 range, depending on his height. Like, he looks like an average-sized dude.
I'm with it.
Well, the whale's going to have a harder time with you.
Okay.
Because you are... I'm not going Sam Pico on you here, Zay. I'm just saying that you are taller. It's much like talking with Bucky yesterday. Bucky suggesting that he's going to outrun a freaking grizzly bear. He sees a grizzly bear, he's just going to turn and run, which is hilarious because Bucky hasn't tried to do a sprint in probably 15 to 20 years. But the only chance Bucky has with that grizzly bear is if it tries to eat his forearm first, and then the forearm turns into that toothpick that you're flipping in your mouth, and it keeps your mouth propped open. That's Bucky's only chance against the grizzly bear. Your chance against the whale is that it tries to go after you and realizes that it's gagging on you. Hopefully you're going feet first, and it just has to, like, upchuck you back out to keep you alive. Because otherwise, you're screwed. If it's somebody like Justin or I, who is probably, what are you, 6'4", 6'5"?
Yeah, about 6'4".
So I'm 4 inches shorter than you, and I'm a few pounds less than you. I'm done. At that point, I'm probably gone. The whale's just swallowing me. And my best chance is to go Ace Ventura 2 out the other side.
One of my best chances is trying to go Dr. Doolittle, Eddie Murphy style, and just be one with the whale and try to talk to it and talk my way out of it.
I can't get past Zay talking about, well, I need to see how it is in there. You know, if it's cozy, if they've got Wi-Fi, if, you know, if I'm able to get some signal, you know, it might be cozy.
I could just watch some videos for a few minutes. You never know. All right, that is the crap bag for today. Justin Wells, Isaiah Collier helping me out today because Chad Hastings is on vacation for one more day. Coming up on the other side, Dustin McComas of Orange Bloods hops on to help us preview the College World Series. Texas baseball gets things going this weekend, Sunday night at 6 o'clock, a game you can hear right here on the Horn. This is Shirts and Skins on the Horn.